Hey guys, thanks for joining me for this 70th episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include Holly Sherman from A&E's Night Watch, which airs Thursdays, 10 Eastern, 9 local time. We'll also visit with Canadian country artist Shelley Lynch. We'll talk about her last single, Dreams and Gasoline, and her new single that's out, Make It to Memphis. Of course, if you would, please take the time to subscribe, comment, leave some feedback, check out the shop, and share with your friends. Several stories around we're going to share with you today, plus, like I said, those special guests and starting things off. You know, millennials definitely are not kids anymore. Now, some of them are turning 40 now, but they're not thrilled about heading into the next stage of life. There's a discussion on Reddit right now where millennials are sharing the, quote, most middle-aged thing they recently caught themselves saying. And here are some of the most popular answers. Number one, calling a 21-year-old guy a kid. Number two, they just don't make them like they used to. Talking about Goodwood dressers. Number three, I had a riveting conversation with some friends about the best office chairs for lumbar support. Number four, I haven't had a drink in 6 months, maybe. I'm not sober or anything, it's just that alcohol makes me sleepy. Number 5, at Home Depot, I said, oh yeah, that's some good lumber. Number 6, you want to go out to dinner? Well, I can't. I have chicken in the fridge that I have to cook before it goes bad. Number 7, I can't have caffeine or I'll never get to sleep. And I said that at 1 p.m. And number 8, I was venting to a coworker about the noisy people living next to me, and I actually said the words, damn teenagers and their Bluetooth machines. Well, in other news, if you're sick of only getting paid every 2 weeks, the jobs website Zipia posted a list of the 10 jobs that make the most tips. Now, you can probably guess what number one is, but here are all 10. Number one, servers. Now, tips are still how they make the most of their money. Number two, food delivery drivers. Now, there are tons of jobs now because of COVID. Number three, babysitters and nannies. Now, a lot of people tip on top of their hourly. Number 4, Uber and Lyft drivers. And obviously taxi drivers still exist in some spots. Number 5, bartenders. The general rule is $1 per drink or 20% of your total tab. Number 6, doormen. They can make a lot around the holidays. Number 7, golf caddies. They can get $50 per player or more if it's a really nice course. Number 8, DJs at parties. For song requests, especially if they put a tip jar out. Number 9, hotel employees. Now, you remember what hotels are? I know, it's been a while. And number 10, hairdressers and beauticians. Now, most people tack on a decent tip. We'll be back with a special guest from A&E's Night Watch. We'll visit with Holly Sherman right after this. Got a little bit of COVID insanity to talk about before we get to our guest. Not sure if you guys know about this one, but Casa Bonita, which is a famous Mexican restaurant in Denver, has live entertainment. And they're about to have to shut down because of how much money it lost during the pandemic. Now, several dozen people stood outside the restaurant on Saturday trying to raise money to keep it from going out of business. And Casa Bonita in Denver, when I was in school, we used to go to camp. Up in Colorado, went to Casa Bonita every year. What a treat. And like so many other businesses, having to shut its doors because of COVID. The A&E Network's hit series Night Watch is back for another season. And from that, we've got on the line, we've got Holly Sherman, the New Orleans paramedic, with us. And tell us what it's like getting the response back from the viewers of Night Watch, especially living through it yourself firsthand. I mean, what was that like the first time around, if you will?
We got a lot of positive responses from both non-medical and medical people. I think more importantly, you know, we got the support and the love from the first responder community that we were hoping for. You know, the first responder community hasn't always been portrayed accurately, you know, between shows and, you know, media. And so I was so just honored to be a part of that and have it be successful.
The Night Watch in New Orleans. I mean, would Night Watch fit anywhere else, do you think?
I just, it's so hard to see it other places, I think, because, you know, New Orleans has so much to offer at night. We have such a diverse, you know, a set of calls. You know, we get trauma, we get really critical medical patients. Of course, you know, we get all the drunk patients and, you know, stuff from Bourbon Street. And then the people are just so vibrant and so eclectic, as are, you know, the personalities that you'll see on the show, these paramedics that are providing care. And so it's such a special city. And I think it's the perfect city for a show like this.
And you talked about the personality and the flair of the EMTs as well. And how cool do you think it is to be able to spotlight that? Because so many times we just see a uniform or a badge and not necessarily the person. And to be able to spotlight the different people that are involved in this as well.
I think it's amazing. I think not only, you know, to showcase those actual people, but, you know, to show other people that we aren't a particular personality. We aren't a particular, you know, standard just person. You know, we are very diverse. We all have very different lives and very different personalities. And so, you know, any person that may be interested, you know, in the job, they can see that, you know, you don't have to be anything specific. You can be yourself and do this job.
And Holly, how often do you find yourself saying only in New Orleans? I mean, is that like a daily occurrence for you?
Yes, I feel like absolutely. It amazes me, you know, the situations that people can get themselves into. And, you know, it feels like it's just so New Orleans because the city itself is so crazy.
In this last 12 months, I mean, have you seen things change up as far as maybe some of the calls that you guys have been getting?
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, when the pandemic started, before we ever even actually realized it was here, we just had this huge, huge increase of really critically ill respiratory patients. And we also just saw, you know, young people that were deceased, you know, and it was scary. And it was like, you know, what's going on? Like, where are all these sick people coming from with this, you know, with these respiratory problems that we haven't seen before? So that was really weird. And it was definitely, you know, something we had to get used to. But I feel like now we're pretty proficient, you know, at taking care of those people.
What was maybe the biggest 2020 thing that you guys had to learn that that you guys obviously have had to enact and take into your daily routine as well?
There was, you know, because COVID is so, you know, contagious, there were some patients that we would, you know, normally do certain procedures to, like, you know, just give nebulizers that is second nature to you, that, you know, you just automatically do without any thought process because you know they need it. And we had to remember to not do that and to do something different to take care of those people so that we didn't expose ourselves. Because if we took ourselves out of the game, who is left, you know, to take care of the public?
Now, Holly, how long did it take for you to feel comfortable knowing that the cameras were on and around you? Or are you still fighting with that today?
No, those guys are so professional. And, you know, I think the film industry itself is just as eclectic as the city is and as we are. And so we fit in with their personalities like flawlessly. And then they are also just so professional that they never got in our way. And we never, you know, I'd say in the beginning, we didn't know what the show would be. So we really had no fear. We thought, you know, it was just going to be some obscure, you know, documentary on some small, you know, channel and that not a lot of people would see it. So there was no fear there. I think if I would have known that this was going to be a major show on a major network, I probably would have been scared.
Now, Holly, have you been recognized, maybe been thrown off a little bit? Has that been something hard for you to deal with now?
It's a positive and a negative. So we get recognized every single day inside of our community and outside of it. But, you know, having that automatic trust that now exists between us and the community is like a very positive part of it. When I walk in someone's house and they see me, they know my name and they know they can trust me. And that's beautiful. But then on the negative, you know, end of it, there are times where, you know, we are in the middle of the street and we are trying to take care of a patient. And there are people that are trying to film it or they're screaming about, you know, getting autographs and taking pictures. And that can be, you know, a little bit difficult, you know, to to tune that out or to, you know, kind of clear that situation so that we can focus on that patient.
And again, if folks want to find more information about Night Watch or anything that you've got going social media wise, always want to make sure and let our listeners know that as well.
So yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram at nightwatch_Holly, or just search my name, Holly Sherman, and I'll pop right up. I actually just started doing a podcast on a platform called Patreon. It's called the Hero's Journey Podcast, and you can find the link for that also in my Instagram bio. And I use Twitter. We live tweet during the show. Nightwatch Holly is the handle for that as well. And that's about the extent of my social media.
There you go. And again, next episode coming up on Thursday, 9 local time, 10 Eastern on A&E. And Holly, it's been great to visit with you this morning. Looking forward to the new episodes. And hopefully we can catch up again real soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, do you have a friend who is always late? And if you say no, well, maybe you're that friend. 7 out of 10 groups of friends say they have a person who's pretty much always late, according to a new survey. But less than a quarter of people are willing to admit they are that friend. 47% of people say they've lied to their friend who's always late about what time something was starting. So that way, if the person got there late, they'd actually be on time. The survey also found we're pretty generous about what counts as late. We won't officially say someone's late until after 13 minutes. Now, the top three things we stress about being late to are job interviews, doctor's appointments, and the airport. And the top three excuses we use when we're late are traffic, the alarm clock not going off, and car trouble. Our next guest on the podcast, Canadian country singer and songwriter Shelley Lynch. And first off, Shelley, appreciate you taking some time to be on the show.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. It's great.
Now tell us, Shelley, just off of the heels of your last single, now got a new single out and about. What's it like, as much time as you've had in the industry, to see the music business now the way it's been this last couple of years?
Well, things have changed a lot. I'm just going to say that. But, you know, it's a never-ending learning experience for me in anything in life. But in the music business, it's nonstop learning. I think this year has been the most exciting. I've just, all of a sudden, I feel this confidence level that I've never felt and just decided, you know, I'm doing this. And it's brought me to a whole new level, which is so amazing and so much fun. So I'm really looking forward to getting out there actually on the road.
So the time to yourself was good, is what you're telling us.
It was really good for me. It was good. It was like, you know, when COVID hit in 2020, it was for me, I always take the positive out of everything. And when it first came out and everybody was afraid, the first thought that I had, because I've been in emergency medicine as a paramedic for just retired after about 30 years, don't want to date myself, but right out of high school. And, you know, my first thought was, you know, if I die and I go to heaven, what am I going to do? Like, I gotta talk to God and say, you gave me this amazing gift and I really didn't give it all that I could. And that's the honest truth. Like, it just turned me right around and I was like, okay, I'm doing this. And here I am.
Now, what was the first step for you once you knew that you had nothing to hold back?
Well, I knew that I needed good players, which, you know, I've been down to CRS quite a bit and met a lot of people. And I knew that I needed good production. And I had met Dean Miller down there again. And he said, you know, I'm producing, you know, and I said, I know. That was like literally probably 3 weeks before COVID hit. We were at CRS. And at that time, even I was like, he's like, well, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just here to have fun. And Kathy, thank goodness for her. She's the one that took me down there and really wanted me to continue. And at that time, I still wasn't even ready. And all of a sudden it just hit me. And I called up Dean and said, let's do this. I didn't even know how. I mean, I couldn't get down there, but we zoomed into a music studio down there, Beard Music. And then I had them send the backing tracks up here to Canada, went to MCC Studio out of Calgary, and they did a great job with the vocals, sent it back to Nashville. It was kind of a process, but, you know, getting a little creative, that's all.
Now, Dean, he didn't have any interesting stories, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, he's quite an interesting guy. And yes, he definitely has interesting stories, and he did a great job. It was only a 4-song LP, but then I asked him to do acoustic tracks as well. So 4 production and 4 acoustic. And he's like, nobody does that, Shelley. I'm like, I don't care. I do. It was so funny. Like, he's really good to talk to. And Zooming this studio was so amazing. They allowed my input, which was so great, because when you songwrite, for me anyways, I'm a little crazy, if you didn't know that. I hear things in my head, and sometimes I can't play it. Everything I play is by ear. So if I can't play it, I need to get somebody to play it. And I'm like, no, that's not right. You got to do it this way. And it's not being bossy. It's just that what I hear in my head, right?
Yeah. Now, how was it that you were able to put your career, do a full medical career, if you will? And I know that music for you started at an early age. I mean, why was it that you didn't pursue music earlier?
I actually did. I have the Walk Through Life album I did when Sadie, my daughter, was 2. She's 29.
Wow.
So, I did. And then I did another album and another album, but I couldn't really figure out how to make money until this year. I really started, I got some great people, a great team working with me, and they're really showing me the ropes and saying, hey, listen, you can do this and you can make a living doing this. So the other, like, I go to work, I'm up at 10 after 3 in the morning. I still go to work. I work for my brother. We come from a family of businesses. Yep. So it's like I'm office manager for his business, and I work, and then I come home and I do music, and then I go to work, and I repeat day after day, month after month, you know, but I love it. I absolutely love life. I love where I'm at. I love the people I'm around, and it's so great. Eventually, when I can make enough money that I don't have to do that job anymore, my brother has already said, this is the mafia, and if you quit or get fired, you're still going to have to work and you're not going to get paid. So you might as well still be part of it, right?
Right.
I mean, the goal is obviously to get out there and get going. It's my passion. I've learned I can never get away from it. I've tried. Trust me. I have tried, because it's a very difficult place to be, but I'm so glad that I didn't ever lose what's truly in my heart, because from age 10, 12, playing guitar, writing songs and thinking that I was absolutely crazy. And back then you didn't have a computer, you just had a pen, and it felt like somebody else writing, taking the pen, if you will. And I thought I was crazy until I was about 13, I think. And I heard on the radio, Alan Jackson, and I tell this story lots because it stuck with me. And he said basically kind of the same thing. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm not crazy. This is okay. So, yeah.
Now, I know you've been writing songs since you were early teens and still to date. Now, when you found the newfound passion in the music, do you notice how the songwriting has changed for you as well?
You know, no. Honestly, because when I know when a good song comes out, because it literally comes out in probably 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I cannot even type fast enough on the computer for the words that are coming out of my head. And at that moment, I'm like, whoa, where did that come from? Like, I literally look at it and go, wow, that's so cool. And I'm so blessed for that. And I can't even tell you where that comes from. I just know that it's here. And I believe that my purpose is to share that with people, because if I can help people, we all put our pants on the same way. I go to work, you go to work. We all do that, right?
Right.
And if I can share what's coming out of my crazy head and it helps somebody, then that's a good thing, right?
That's right.
So
now,
that's where I'm at.
Who are your songwriting influences that have influenced you the most in your songwriting styles?
You know, nobody's actually asked me that. That's a good question. Right off the top of my head, though, that comes to mind is when I started learning guitar with my older sisters, had a band. There's five girls and one boy. And they would play a lot of John Denver. My dad liked Charlie Pride. So I would pay attention, especially John Denver songs. I was like, wow, that's cool how you wrote that. And I started really paying attention to it back in the day. And then any singer-songwriter that I really listen to what they have to say. And I whether that influences me or not, I'm not really sure. The structure, definitely. Seeing how country music is, I mean, when I was a teenager, I listened to rock too, AC/DC, Bryan Adams, you name it. But country music is really truly who I am. I grew up that way. And so I pay attention to those that are writing in country, and I try to stay in that pattern, if you will.
So you did like I did as well. Did you go through an angsty stage being from Canada? Did you have a little Alanis inspirations in a period in your life?
Yeah, I think so. I was like, who is that girl? But you know, I actually watched a documentary on her, which was like pretty amazing. And I really seen both sides. Like, I think country I'm more drawn to because you can more hear the singer sing the song, whereas rock is kind of buried a little in some fancy guitar, but we all write the same. It's true. It's like from your heart, right? And that's why it's really difficult to co-write, because it's from your soul. It's like I'm putting my soul out there for people to go, hey, you ain't no good. Oh, I like her, you know, kind of thing. But it doesn't matter anymore to me. What matters is that I get it out there, and that's my goal. So
now we talked about the current single for you. Tell us about the right behind that, the inspiration, and how excited you are to have new music out there again.
I am so excited. This is like, my life has totally changed. Even in the last month, to I'm happier. I can tell that bringing music into my life makes me happy. And the new single that came out, so Dreams and Gasoline, I was actually asked by a person that I know from years and years back. He had a cancellation to open the show in my small town of Fernie. He's like, phones me up, hey, can you just come play five acoustic songs? And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. And after I hung up the phone, I went, well, that was dumb, Shelly. You haven't picked up your guitar in how long, right? So then a friend of mine who I'd helped him get connections and get his career going, Travis Pickering, he came over and we were jamming and he played guitar for me for that show. While we were jamming, he started playing this strum and I was like, hey, can you teach me that? I need to learn that. And so before he showed up for a practice, I'm like, I got the song in my head. I really need to learn this. So we sat down. He's like, do you want to write a song? And I was like, I don't normally do that, but you know what? What the heck? Let's just try. We literally sat in this room and I was in awe. Because he shares the same values in life with me, it was easy for me to just put it out there. And it was about, he kept saying to me, you got to get your career back on track. Like, what are you doing? Why are you not doing this? I'm like, I don't know. I go, oh my God, you sound like my dad. My dad passed in 2015 and he was like that. He was like, just get going. Right. And that's about the song. It's about putting some fire under your butt and get the heck going. And out came Dreams and Gasoline. And it was so awesome. Like, I just totally love that song. And then as we're playing that, he plays me the song. We're sitting on my deck. He goes, I gotta play you a song I wrote. I'm like, cool. Make it to Memphis. I literally, like, I have goosebumps right now talking about it because I remember that day so clearly. And he's like, yeah, I think I'm going to record this. And I said, well, if you don't, you make sure and let me know. And about 4 months later, he called me up and he goes, yeah, the people I'm working with, they said it wasn't good enough. And I'm like, what? Are you crazy? And he's like, do you want to record it? And I'm like, hell yeah, I do. And I said, but I have to personalize it to me. So I changed a bit of it, and it was only acoustic version. I took it to Nashville, did a bunch of, but the song Make It to Memphis is like, he even says, he goes, that's your song now. It's about me. It's what I'm doing, right? It's who I am. But if I don't make it this time around, keep me in your memory, but let me go, right? The end of the song, just let me be free, because it's going to drive me crazy for the rest of my life if I don't carry on this passion of music. That's the story behind two songs.
Well, that sounded like an intro, is what that sounded like.
So I need to practice anyways, so we'll call this a practice, okay?
There you go. Feel that was your song.
Yeah, it's totally, hey, I stole that song. Sorry, Travis, it's all mine now.
Now, is it hard for you to grasp a song that was written by somebody else harder than it is for something that you've written personally?
It has been, and I actually haven't co-written lyrics with anybody until Travis came. And the Make It to Memphis, I just totally loved it. But I put my own input in it. So it made the song me, right, if you will. Right. So I don't know. We'll see where it goes. See where this leads me. Right. You know, I'm pretty open to that.
Yeah. Now this last 12 months, obviously everything's changed for everybody. Social media has been huge, and How much of a challenge has getting out there social media wise been for you?
Well, do you really want to know? Kathy has been, so Kathy's my youngest sister and she has to help me in that area because my Facebook blew up when Spotify went to 5,000, then 10,000 and then 20,000. And it just grew so fast in the last actually couple months. And now my personal Facebook page is almost topped out at 5,000 that it now doesn't really belong to me anymore. It feels like it's the music really. But Kathy helps me. So thank goodness for her.
And how validating is that for you as well to see the music really picking up?
It feels surreal, actually. And in a way, that's a good thing because it keeps you, my dad always said, you have to stay humble no matter what you do. He firmly believed that shoveling poop, I won't say it on your radio, and running a business, you have to put the same effort, which is 110%. It doesn't matter what you do. But you always have to stay humble because staying real and the real reason for why you're here on this earth kind of thing. And I really take that to heart. He was really my stronghold. And I think that's, you know, why I hung up my guitar for so long, because it was like, you could say it was writer's block or whatever, but it was like my strength. And I feel my dad. I feel him in this room, you know. So the thing about being surreal, it doesn't feel like a talk show that I had a couple of weeks ago. She's like, I said, you know, if I get famous, that's a bonus. She goes, well, you're well known here. And I'm like, what? I am? Where? What? But honestly, that's a bonus. If I can get out there and just make a living, and I love life so much and I love where I'm at, if I could just make a living doing this, that makes me happy. And anything that comes after that is truly a bonus. Truly.
That's awesome. And that's a great way to see things as well. Now, Shelly, if folks do want to keep up with the social media that Kathy will be following for them as well.
I do watch it all the time. And she tells me, she's always like, look at this. Right. You can go to Shelly Lynch Music on Facebook. I also have a website, ShellyLynch.com, and opt into the emails. So I send out personal emails. There's going to be a lot of action in that area too, just different ideas that we come up with. And I'm on Twitter, Instagram. I even started a TikTok account.
Uh-oh.
And it's kind of crazy. Actually, I'm still on MySpace, I believe, if I looked it up somewhere, but I'm going to check it out after this just to see.
That's awesome. Well, Shelly, it's been great to visit with you today. I appreciate you sharing the song with us as well. I wish you nothing but continued success through 2021, and hopefully we'll catch up again real soon.
That would be awesome. Thank you so much, and really appreciate being here. The opportunity is great.
Well, before we wrap up, wanted to share a few more good news stories that are making the rounds in case you hadn't heard them. Now, it has been a challenging year at work, but believe it or not, people are still pretty satisfied with their jobs. In fact, there was slightly higher job satisfaction last year than there was in 2019. Now, one of the biggest reasons is how lots of companies stepped up to take care of their workers. People gave very high scores to things like company health plans, the performance review process, flexible time plans, and family leave plans. In other news, a 7-year-old kid in Tennessee who saved up his allowance to buy a new fishing rod caught an 83-pound catfish last week. Now that's just 2 pounds under the state record. Now the catfish is 47 inches, so that's about the same size as the kid. There's also a video of a 24-year-old woman in Washington telling her dad that thousands of people donated to cover his hospital bills for a massive stroke he suffered in August. Now, the people who donated had watched his recovery on TikTok. And finally, Americans have confidence in the economy for the first time since the pandemic hit, according to a new Gallup poll. Our confidence level is now a +2, which means people are slightly more positive than negative. A year ago, it was -33. Well, thanks again for joining me for this 70th episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, a question, or anything else you'd like to know, you can hit me up on the contact page at gqwithcam.com. You can also find me on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at gqwithcam. If you'd like to help out in the funding for this podcast, you can visit the merch store. We've got hoodies, mugs, tumblers, shirts, stickers, and more. It's gqwithcam.com/shop. Or if you'd like to make a one-time donation, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/GQWithCam. If you do have a special guest idea, you can email me, gqwithcam@gmail.com. Again, thanks to our good friend Brandon Allen for coming up with our theme music. We're going to let him play us out and hope you guys have a great rest of your Tuesday.